Im Gespräch mit Randall Bernberg über positive Psychologie, Teil 2. Sie sind ein Problemlöser? Sie wollen einer werden? Dann sind Sie hier genau richtig. Mein Name ist Georg Jocham. Willkommen zu meinem Podcast Abenteuer Problemlösen. Heute gibt's den zweiten Teil meines Gesprächs mit Randall Bernberg über positive Psychologie. Das Gespräch selber haben wir schon vor einiger Zeit aufgenommen, aber gerade heute habe ich mit Randall telefoniert und er hat mir ein Angebot mitgegeben, das ich kurz vorstellen möchte. Ein Workshop, ein Training, ein Seminar zum Thema positive Psychologie, das schreckt viele Menschen erstmal ab. Um diese Hürde zu überwinden, hat Randall ein Angebot, damit die Schwellenangst ein wenig kleiner wird. Er kommt kostenlos für einen 60-minütigen Vortrag zu Unternehmen, die sich für das Thema interessieren. Und kostenlos heißt kostenlos. Keine Reisekosten, nichts. Wenn das für dich und für das Unternehmen, in dem du arbeitest, interessant ist, dann geh am besten auf die Homepage von Randall. letsspeakhappiness.com ist die Adresse und kontaktiere ihn auf diesem Weg. Sein Buch Ekelhaft gut gelaunt, über das wir am Ende zu sprechen kommen, erscheint übrigens bald als E-Book. Und hier die Fortsetzung meines Gesprächs mit Randall Bernberg.
Because what's going to happen at the end of the day is even more beautiful. So you make your bed, you come out, you what we do if you're in a relationship, we have rituals, you know, you have different rituals throughout the day. Remember, we're talking about long-term stories where you start daily and you do it every day, and you have to start rituals because they have to seem automatic after a while. And I talk a lot about how our habits are formed, and habits are formed with repetition. They're formed with time and place. And they're formed with values. They're formed with, like, what are your values? Your vatten. What are your values? So if one of your values is to become a happier person, then you need to start happier rituals. So make your bed. The next thing I often say is in my workshops is I tell people to sit with their partner and when you're drinking coffee and sit 15, 20 minutes, make time in the morning and talk about your day. What do you plan on doing in the day? What do you plan on? A little bit of visualization. What success stories do you plan on having that day? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you integrate that into your daily life. I know on weekends it might be a little more difficult, and it even might be more difficult with children. Or you write it down. You write, what am I expecting today? What are some of the things I want? What are some successes that I want to have today? So you get in your car, or you get dressed, you take a shower, you get in your car, and you start driving to work. Very often we're in traffic. What do we do in traffic? What's the first thing we start doing? That's a question to you.
Actually, I hear audiobooks and podcasts, so I don't really care about traffic jams. I kind of enjoyed it because it gives me more time to listen to what I want to listen to.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, you're part of the smaller population of people that can enjoy traffic. I think the first instinct with traffic is I have no control, and I'm basically I have no control. And the worst feeling to have is no control over your situation. Even at work, you know, I tell managers to really give space to their employees and give them trust to trust them in making the correct decisions and not standing behind them, helping them make decisions. Give them the control and the trust, because we function better when we feel in control. So you're in traffic. Instead of moaning about not being able to get out of traffic, because very often you can't get out of traffic, it's just the situation, is to become more mindful, is to take a look at your car and to start to be more grateful about where you're at and what you have. We live in a Western world where we have cars. We have cars with with heaters, we have pretty good cars. I mean, with TÜV, and do they have TÜV in Austria?
It's got a different name, but we do have it, of course. Yeah,
you have TÜV. So you have really good cars. We have highways that are really well maintained. I mean, we have so much to be thankful for. And in these moments when we really don't have to control, I always say, what can you be thankful for at this very moment?
Excuse me. So I have to really mention the quote of today of, I believe it was of Sigmar Gabriel. You heard that? When President-elect Trump said, Germans have to buy more American cars. And Wirtschaftsminister Sigmar Gabriel replied, yeah, well, then Americans have to build better cars.
Okay.
I like that.
It's a nice comeback, right? I mean, it's really a nice comeback. It's a clever, quick comeback.
Yeah.
And
he's right, by the way.
Yeah. The thing is that, you know, we different cultures really concentrate on different cannot concentrate, but are more focused on different aspects of life. And in Germany and in many parts of Europe, we focus on being perfect. And perfection is one of these things that really, it's a wonderful thing, perfection. If I'm in my car, and especially my little German, my 20-year-old BMW that I have that I love, and I'm on the highway doing 200 in this car, I want that car to be perfect. And I want those roads to be perfect. You know, because perfection in this case is a matter of my life and my death. So perfection is a beautiful thing. So back to my story, when I'm in my car and I'm in traffic in this wonderful car that I have, that I just become aware of the moment and become aware of what I have around me. Look outside and notice maybe the things on the side of the highways that I never really noticed because I was rushing to work and I didn't notice what was that. Wow, there are trees on the side of the highway. How about that? Or, boy, look at those buildings. I've never really noticed those buildings are, you know, 100 years old. Look at that. So to be more conscious and mindful about being in the moment on your way to work. So you get to work finally. You're in the parking lot and you're sitting there before you go inside to work. Just think about what your day could look like. Again, go back to, you know, what am I looking forward to today? Remember what I talked about, how I talked about my mom. What is my day going to be like today? What am I looking forward to? You get out of your car, you go in, you say hi to people, smiling. I mean, people underestimate smiling, but, you know, smiling actually releases hormones that make us feel better. You know, there were studies done by a German scientist in the 70s that actually smiling is like a drug. It works on a part of our brain that gives us a positive emotion. And the wonderful thing about smiling is it's contagious. You smile, other people smile back. So now you've gone into work and you started to smile, all right? You go to your desk, you turn on your computer, you get a cup of coffee. Like most people, they go to the coffee machine. You go to your computer, you turn it on. What's the first thing you do when you turn on your computer? What do you do, George?
I try not to, but normally I check my emails.
Right. You're not alone. There's a lot of people out there. The first thing they do is check their emails. So here's what you do at work. Before you read any emails, many people have two emails in there when they get to work. Some people have 100, but there's going to be definitely some not so good news in there from a dissatisfied customer, a dissatisfied employee, maybe your boss. Before you read any emails, what I want you to do is I want you to write a thankful email. I want you to write a grateful email. Somebody that you can thank. So it could be your boss for something that happened the day before. Maybe that compliment he gave you, or that attention he gave you when you told him about your marathon run in Paris. You can write your boss an email and say, I want to thank you for yesterday's attention you gave me. Or a thank you email to a colleague that brought you a cup of coffee the day before, or a thank you email to your wife or a friend or anything. So you start your work day with thanking somebody. Now, this is beautiful because what it does is it starts your business, because your computer very often is your business. It starts your business world thanking somebody. Again, remember, we want to start out with a positive emotion because these positive emotions make us more problem solving, more creative in solving problems. So it starts our day with something beautiful.
I especially like that one, really. I have to make that a habit. I like it.
And basically, it's a habit. We talked about these habits. So what do? You can connect. You know, habits are time and place. They need to be connected with a time and a place. So maybe you connect this habit of writing a thank you email with bringing back your cup of coffee to your desk. So you go to the coffee machine, you come to your desk, and you connect coffee with thank you emails. Mm-hmm. So, and then because habits kind of are connected to something before it, and this is how habits are formed. They lead into something else. I wanted to go to the gym. So what did I do? I started a routine 3 times a week to go to the gym. So I connected it with a meeting every Monday and Thursday. I had a meeting and it ended at 10 o'clock. And I connected it with the end of that meeting. So I put my gym bag in my car. And right after the meeting, I went to the gym. And it wasn't about going to the gym that was the part that was the habit. It was connecting it with the after the meeting going to the gym. Mm-hmm. So I would say connect this thank you email with a cup of coffee. So speaking of another thing you can do at work to be a happier person. Now, remember, we're talking about a typical Monday through Friday workday. There are things you do outside of work as well. But to be very honest, most of us spend 8, 9, 10 hours a day at work. Mm-hmm. So this is the majority of your time spent. So I imagine that time should include a lot of positive emotions. We need to create positive emotions by activities. Remember, I said it's not necessarily about thinking. It's about feeling and doing, positive doing. So you're at the coffee machine. You got your cup of coffee in the morning. Why not get a cup of coffee for Grace, your colleague that sits next to you? Bring her a cup of coffee. Remember, we're happier giving than we are receiving.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, yeah.
So another thing to do at work, just a very simple thing. Do something for somebody. Give somebody a cup of coffee. If you go out to lunch, that brings us to another thing you can do at work. Lunch story. You've got 45 minutes or an hour of lunch. What do you do during that time? When I work with companies, I tell management to not allow people to sit at their desk during lunchtime. Make it a mandatory rule that employees are not allowed at their desk at lunchtime. So what do they do if they're not at their desk? Well, they're at the lunchroom talking to other coworkers, or they're outside going for a walk. But the main thing is they're not at their desk doing Facebook, checking their email account, doing work. You got to have a separation in the middle of the day between work and pleasure. And I say, go to the lunchroom, go for a walk outside, do something away from work.
Mm-hmm. Ronald, yeah. Do you have any suggestion maybe for the end of the day? Because that's getting quite it's getting quite a lot for a day. Is there anything that really finishes your day beautifully?
Oh, yeah, I have a wonderful one. So after work, you go home and, you started your day basically thanking your bed, you know, getting a laugh from your wife. And at the end of the day, you come home, you have dinner with your children. Now, just a little tip about for those of you who have children, what's the first thing you do if they're of the school age? You generally ask children, how was your day? Well, if you ask a child, my daughter's 21 years old, and I remember when she was in school, and I used to ask her how was her day. Remember what I said earlier about instincts, about how we tick.
Yeah.
We tend to focus on the negative. So how was your day? I hate my math teacher. Or, you know, lunch was terrible.
Sorry.
How do you get around this? Well, you ask your children, what went well on your day? What went well? I call it WWW. What went well today? And so the child basically has to focus on his day in another way. He has to think back and think about his day and what went well. So that's at the dinner table. So that's for your children and you. So, but now what about for your partner? So you go to bed, and this is what I do to end my day. The last thing I do to end my day is I go to my bed and I go, look, the bed is made and it's welcoming me back home. How great is that? And that whole story started, you know, earlier in the day, right? So now I come home, I jump in bed, my partner is with me, we lay in bed, and we've created a ritual, and we've connected it with laying in bed. And remember, you connect rituals with things before it. We get in bed, we turn off the lights, and we kind of get in each other's arms, we get all cuddly, and we say to each other, the three W's, what went well? So we do 3 to 5 things. So I start first. I say, Katya, what went well today? What are you grateful for today? Give me three things you're grateful for. And Katya, every single night for the last 2.5 years, this woman says the same thing. She says, I'm grateful for the wonderful cup of coffee you made me this morning. And I just don't make, you got to understand, if you're ever at my house, if any of you come visit me, you're not going to get just a cup of coffee. You're getting an espresso. You're getting a total Italian espresso that I have this little Chilio espresso, you know, this Edelstar thing. I don't have a machine. I've got this little thing that you turn, you put the coffee in, and you cook it, and it's the most amazing coffee. Katya says to me, I'm grateful for your coffee.
Sorry, Randall. I believe we have to tell our listeners that you have Italian ancestors, and no doubt your espresso is excellent, really.
And I'll tell you, all your listeners are invited to my house for coffee. You
know? They're going to like that.
It's ready about 6:45 in the morning. That's my ritual. The coffee is one of my rituals, and we come and we talk together about our days. But the coffee is part of that ritual. And you're also invited too, George, if you make it up to Aachen, you're in.
I will.
So then Katya talks about, you know, a customer said we've got some really good, a product was great. And I talked to my father today, and he was very healthy. And then I do three gratefuls, you know, I talked to my daughter. She had a great day at school. I had a great workshop. People told me I changed their life, which when I hear things like that, I'm just amazed. And then I do 3, 5, we can go on and on and on because I see many gratefuls. And then we kiss and we go to sleep and we turn and that ends our day. And the amazing thing about this is that if you end your day with feeling good, you sleep better, you get up easier, you basically have a better day. And again, wherever you focus, it grows. If you focus on negativity, it grows. If you focus on positivity, it grows. And basically, we start our day and end our day focusing on positivity, and then we see more gratefuls throughout the day, you know? And this is a well-rounded day. Some gratefuls to start the day in the morning at home, some gratefuls at work, or some positivity at work, and then our gratefuls at the end of the day. And I always say, you know, my slogan, or my, I don't want to call it slogan, but my motto, what I always say to people is I say, look, how you are during your day depends on how you see things. It's called perspective, Wahrnehmungen.
Mm-hmm.
And your perspective can either be a positive way to see things or a negative way to see things. A lot of that depends on genetics, And a large majority, as I said, depends on how you see it and how you want to see it. So my motto is, it's your choice and how you see it. It's deine Entscheidung and how you see your day, you know? And that's what I always tell people. They complain about their day, or that they want to look at their day like, wow, that was a wonderful day. And at the end of the day, and this is also an expression, at the end of the day, it's your choice. It's mm-hmm. your choice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah? I believe this podcast recording already is a treasure for anyone who wants to be more positive, or who wants to bring more positivity into life. Let me, I believe we almost made the hour full. There's one more question that's important to me as a problem solver. I know that in psychology, there's something like a growth mindset and a fixed mindset. Can you tell us something about that?
Sure. A woman named Carol Dweck did some research in the 70s and 80s, and she was a professor and a wonderful, I mean, she's changed this whole positive psychology, this whole realm of positive psychology. She really added to it. She did some research where she went into some schools and she worked with school children. And very interestingly, she went in and she gave them a test. She told kids, we're going to take a test. Now, and I don't know about you, but when I was in school and the teacher said, okay, kids, surprise, we're having a test today. I was a little bit like, well, okay, really? Oh, no. You know, I wasn't very enthused, you know.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But anyway, she went in and she basically said this. She just said, we're going to take a test. And she really wasn't interested in what the test was. She was interested in the reaction of people. And what she did over the years, she noticed that there were two reactions to a challenge. And one reaction was called a fixed mindset. Fixed, meaning the kids who had the fixed mindset were like, oh no, I'm no good with tests. I hate math. So they literally started taking the test with a negative attitude. The kids who had what she called a growth mindset started the test with, wow, I love tests. And they like rolled up their sleeves and was ready to take this test. And what she realized was that the kids who took these tests, the people who had growth mindsets literally scored better than the kids who had fixed mindsets.
Mm-hmm.
So she took this mindset story basically, and she got together with some business consultants, and they went out and they went into companies and wanted to work with this. How do you see challenges? Do you see this as, well, I'll never do good with it, I'm no good at this? Or do you see a challenge as, okay, well, it's okay. If I fail, then I fail. I'll do it again, you know, I'll do it better next time. And she learned that there are people, and we generally get these fixed and growth mindsets from our childhood. What we saw and what we heard in our childhood is what we feel and what we do in our adulthood. Mm-hmm. So basically, a lot of the things our teachers told us, I had a math teacher, for example, that said I wasn't good in math. She said, you know, you never do your homework, you're not very good in math. And I developed a fixed mindset when it came to math. I thought I was no good. So when math tests came, I was like, well, I'm no good in math, I won't do good. But the better teachers who said, wow, you're really good, and you did better than you did last time, you know, it's this progress, or you're making progress attitude teacher, that was a lot better than the teachers who just said you weren't good at something, you know. So this fixed and growth mindset in the workplace looks like if you have a challenge and you say, I'm not good at this, I've never been good at this, and I can't really learn this thing. You know, the fixed mindset people look at people above them, or look at, not above them, but they look at like great runners. If you're a marathon runner and you look at a great runner and you say, well, I'll never be like him. He's got more talent than I do. The growth mindset people would look at the same runner and go, wow, if I worked hard enough, I'll be like him. I know I can get there. So they have more of a more positive attitude towards life. And, you know, you talk a lot about problem solving.
Yeah.
And this problem solving area, when you get a problem, how do you treat it? Do you treat it as something that you've never been able to solve? So that means you'll never be able to solve? Or do you treat it as, you know, I've never been able to solve this, but maybe this time I can, you know? And this is the difference between a fixed mindset and a growth mindset.
Yeah.
And Carol Dweck saw this, and she basically says that the good teacher or the good manager would say something like, if you failed on a project at work, the good manager wouldn't say, well, you'll never get this because you're not really good at bookkeeping. The good manager would say, well, you know, you've got a few things to learn. You're not there yet. And this is a very, very, very big thing in this whole mindset story. Your boss or your superior or your teacher will tell you you're not there yet. Yet is the word.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And this is the difference between fixed and growth mindsets.
Okay. As far as I understand it, as a problem solver, you should have a growth mindset. And if you haven't, you at least should have a boss who understands that there's different ways of saying the same thing that make a difference to you. Like, you're not there yet.
Definitely.
Okay.
You're not there yet. And it's very important. You're not there yet. I mean, you'll never be good at this. You know, there are no absolutes. You'll never be good at this. What do you mean I'll never be good at this?
Yeah.
And, you know, I always tell people to take a look at this in their own life, in their own personal life. If you're 50 years old and you want to sing, you never sang because your singing teacher in second grade said you didn't have a very good voice and you never really sang. And then you thought you couldn't sing. And suddenly you thought about singing at 50 and you said, you know what? I'm going to take singing lessons for the first time. Sing, you know, and this is a personal story, by the way. I started singing lessons in September, last September. I never sang in my life. And now my singing coach says I've got a voice and I'm so happy I did it.
Yeah. So one can develop a growth mindset in areas where the mindset so far has been fixed. Is that right?
Yeah, right. So that's a very good point. Thank you. Once you have a fixed mindset, let's say it's not fixed. If you have a fixed mindset, you can definitely go over to the growth mindset. And one wonderful way to do this is to face your fears, because the fear that you developed in your childhood from somebody who said to you you weren't good at it, or a trauma that you had, some kind of trauma that made you fearful of something later in life, that fear generally continues throughout your life. And if you just face that fear and say, you know what, I'm afraid of heights because somewhere along the line, my mother told me that it's dangerous to climb trees, so I'm afraid of heights. Well, what about start to climb trees? What about taking a climbing course?
Mm-hmm.
What about to tackle this fear that you have? And this is one of the best ways to go from fixed to growth mindset is take a look at what you're really afraid of and go out and do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because eventually you're going to figure out you're not there yet.
Okay. Randall, you have been out there in Germany for 17 years now, doing workshops, doing trainings in companies, and you just finished your book. And I haven't read it, obviously, because it's not out yet. We'll see if it's out when we publish this podcast. But I love the title. It's called, say it, please.
It's called Ekelhaft gut gelaunt.
Ekelhaft gut gelaunt. Fantastic title. Do you want to tell us something about the book?
Yeah, well, the book is, in English, it almost sounds better in German. It's disgustingly happy in English.
It's much better in German. It's much better.
It is, actually.
Yeah, I like it a lot.
Yeah. Well, the book actually took a long time to put the concept of this book together, and it took even a longer time to sit down and write it. The book basically is a book. It's about three things. It tries to do three things. I have 10 chapters, and in these 10 chapters, I do three things. The first part is it's an autobiography. So basically, every chapter is about a period or a person in my life growing up. Mm-hmm. First chapter, for example, I'll just tell you what the first chapter is about. And then every chapter is similar, but just with a different person and a different experience. First chapter is about my grandfather, because he basically started this whole thing. My grandfather, my mother's father. Now, my grandfather was mafia. And, you know, when you think of mafia, a lot of people think of the Godfather films. You know, they think of, what are you doing? Yeah, what do you want? You know, they think of a lot of this romance. I mean, they look at it and they think of, oh, it might be really cool to be Italian. I mean, it's got some bad points, but it's great to have these Italian-ness. Well, let me tell you, growing up in a mafia family isn't all it's cut out to be, isn't all it sounds like in movies or sees it looks like in movies. I grew up with a very, very strict and violent grandfather. And that stuff gets passed down. You know, these things gets passed down. And in psychology, traumatized as a child, what I said earlier, turns into fear as an adult, you know. Mm-hmm. So I had a lot of these traumas from my grandfather. I had this one chapter. I had trauma in my neighborhood, which was a very Italian, tough, you know, it was in the 60s and the 70s, and it was very racial, very, very racial. It was the South Side of Chicago. And in those years, in the 60s, America was divided on in two ways, black and white. I mean, we were divided on racial lines. I mean, even today, if you look at America, we've got this whole racial thing going on. And, you know, history really says a lot about what we see today. You know, what was historic 50, 60, 70 years ago, really, we say, is shown today in the way people are and how they react. So racism was really big back then in the 60s. And a lot of my stories is about my neighborhood, growing up in a violent neighborhood, growing up in so it's kind of a tough book to read. Mm-hmm. So every chapter talks about something autobiographical. And then the second part in that same chapter does something in psychology called reframing, to reframe. So basically, I go back into that experience I had, and I try to pull out two positive experiences that I had with this seemingly somehow challenging experience. I try to pull out two positive experiences, and I try to make them into basically a science, you know? So now an autobiography turns into a science book. So I pick out two things that basically I learned from my grandfather. And one of those things I really learned in a positive, a scientifically positive thing is rituals and traditions. My grandfather was very, very big on rituals and traditions. You know, mm-hmm. We grew up, he lived next door. My mother lived on the first floor in our building. Her sister lived on the second floor, and her sister lived on the third floor. So I had two aunts on the second and third floor. And they had children. There were nine of us, nine grandchildren living in the same building.
Okay.
Next door to my grandfather, and grandmother. So, and this is how Italians are. The Italians are very, very big on family, as you well know. So, I basically grew up with this whole family story. And my grandfather, he said birthdays needed to be celebrated with the family. Christmas needed to be celebrated with the family. Eating together. Very often we ate together. I actually ate with my mom every single mom and dad, because my grandfather basically made it a rule that we need to eat together, you know? And so rituals and traditions. So now I the book now, the chapter one talks about how science speaks to rituals and traditions. So for example, children who eat with their parents, growing up, who just the ritual of eating dinner with their parents, children are 20% less likely to do drugs and alcohol in teenage years.
Wow.
Okay. So just this ritual of sitting down, talking about your day with your family, later on, this really has a very nice effect on the children. Another wonderful thing, my grandfather he was very generous. He was a giver, generosity, you know. And so the second thing is I talk about Großzügigkeit, generosity, giving, and I talk about the science of giving, you know. They did a lot of experiments in the States about giving. They gave some college students a big sum of money and they said, go out and spend it. They told 50 of them to spend it on themselves and 50 of them to spend it on someone else. They came back, they tested their happiness level. And it turns out the people that spend that money on someone else were happier and stayed happier for a longer period of time. Okay. Wow. So basically autobiography, two science positive things that I took out of that story. And then the third part of every chapter is called Du bist dran. And basically, it's a little bit of it's your turn. It goes into more of a self-help book. And it'll talk about, for example, it says, what were your rituals as a child?
Mm-hmm.
What were some positive experiences you had with these rituals? What are some of your rituals today with your own children? What rituals tomorrow can you start that can be more positive? You see? So every chapter has an autobiographical experience, has two scientific facts about how I reframed my experience. And then the third part is Du bist dran is actually an activity book where you go in and fill out things for yourself. There are 10 chapters. There are 20 different scientific things that were researched and proven to make you a happier person. And then it talks, and then the part about you doing it yourself. So, I've looked around, I've read a lot of books, and I've read wonderful autobiographies. I've read wonderful books on science, and I've done wonderful activity books. I've never actually saw a book that really coupled all three of these things. And I'm really proud of my book. And when it comes out, it'll be relatively short, 180 pages or so. And, you can read it on the bus. You can read it on the train. It'll be an audiobook version. It's something that I've been really, really working on. And for quite a while, and going back and discovering all those experiences that I had was also very sometimes challenging and sometimes saddening. I cried very often writing that book.
Okay.
Because I had to go through those experiences all over again, and sometimes they weren't very easy to go through. But reframing what we do in psychology really helped that out. Helped me deal with a lot of those experiences.
Anyway, I thank you very much. I believe this is going to be a treasure for myself, of course, and for my listeners. Randall, thanks a lot.
I really appreciate it. Thank you very much. And you know what, George? Tonight when I lay down, you're going to be one of my gratefuls.
I'll try a reply. You're not going to feel it, but I'll do it.
Okay, yeah.
Thank you.
Nice talking. Thank you very much. Really, I really appreciate it.
Das war's wieder für heute. Ich freue mich, wenn Sie beim nächsten Mal wieder dabei sind. Wenn Sie Fragen an mich haben, dann schicken Sie mir gerne ein Mail an info@georgjocham.com. Und wenn Ihnen diese Episode gefallen hat, dann freue ich mich wirklich, wirklich über Ihre ehrliche Bewertung auf iTunes. Danke fürs Zuhören. Bis zum nächsten Mal. Ihr Georg Jocham.